Whether you work as a barista or a bus driver, you've probably had to put on emotions that weren't quite genuine. Fabricating a happy face is something that's expected across a wide range of jobs, and those of us who have done it know that the emotional labor involved can be exhausting.
Our next guest researches what happens to people who have to fake their emotions as part of their job and how it impacts their workplace and their well-being.
Alicia Grandy is a professor of industrial organizational psychology at Penn State University. Alicia, welcome to Central Time.
Hi.
So let's first define a little more what we mean when we talk about emotional labor in the workplace.
Sure. Emotional labor is, you can think of it akin to physical labor, right? It's a type of work that one has to do, but instead of with their body or their muscles, it's with their emotions, with their expressions towards others. And it's part of their professional work role. To put on a smile or to manage their emotional expressions with others is an expected requirement of the job.
And you've done a lot of research on what happens when we put on that smile and fake those emotions. And it sounds like it has both mental and physical consequences. What are some of those common results that you found?
There's a whole set of them. So when people are doing this kind of emotional labor continuously day after day, it really can wear on the body. And that's because there's a sense of dissonance between what they're showing and what they're feeling. So that creates a tension within ourselves. We don't tend to like that feeling. So there's associations with symptoms, like health symptoms, like headaches and stomach aches, with mood, so anxiety and depression. There's associations with not liking your job, dissatisfaction, life dissatisfaction. And I'm actually finding in some of my recent research, there's associations with behaviors at home. So it actually spills over and affects sleep. It affects even drinking behavior, willingness to help out at home.
And why do we know why adopting those emotions for a work shift day after day, week after week, month after month? Do we know why it's so exhausting for a human being to do that?
Yeah, so the dissonance idea is one explanation. So when you're putting on an expression that's different than how you feel inside, it creates a dissonance or an inauthenticity. And we as a society, an American society, we tend to like to show how we're feeling, and acting phony doesn't feel right. It creates a tension inside ourselves, and that's a physical tension. It also is effortful. So this is something that's often considered to be easy labor, right? Just smiling at people sounds easy. It sounds pleasant. It sounds intrinsically motivating. But doing it repeatedly with customer after customer, and even customers who are not being the nicest to you, is part of where that extra effort comes in and makes it really fatiguing.
So it might feel really differently if someone comes up and they're genuinely friendly and they smile at you when you're taking their order, as opposed to, and you smile back and you have a nice exchange versus the grumpy person. I think I saw an example of the guy that comes in every day for coffee, never tips and always complains about the coffee being too cold unless he's complaining that it's too hot. So we might be making the same small talk, making the same facial expressions with those two different customers, but we react differently to it, don't we?
Sure, yeah, and it is nice to have those positive exchanges, and that's kind of what we expect with our interactions with friends or family. There's a reciprocity there, a back and forth. If I'm nice to you, I expect you're going to be nice back, because we're maintaining an ongoing relationship. But in these service encounters, that's not necessarily the case. You may not interact with the same person repeatedly. You might see that customer coming, and even though you don't like them because they're always complaining, you still have to interact with them. So there's a lack of reciprocity, of a fair exchange there compared to personal relationships.
What are some of the jobs we talked about? For instance, baristas, we mentioned bus drivers. I worked as a waitress. There's certainly a lot of emotional labor there. Are there other jobs or categories of jobs that we might not be thinking about when we think of emotional labor, but where it's a real component?
Yeah, there's actually been work showing that many, many of our jobs today have an interpersonal, strong interpersonal component. It's almost hard to think of jobs that don't require some amount of emotional labor. Even people who are doing physical labor work, like a construction worker, they might have to work with the client. And in doing so, you know, have to maintain kind of that that professionalism in addition to a friendly tone, regardless of their internal state. But some occupations that have been studied include administrative assistants, so receptionists or people who support managerial staff. It's people that include cheerleaders, professional cheerleaders. Their job is obviously to maintain a high level of enthusiasm, to keep the crowd up. They've been studied as a group. There's a whole, nurses, people in the caring professions. Also, they're both maintaining a professional air, but also trying to calm people who are upset, even if they themselves might be feeling disgusted or fatigued at the time in their work interactions.
We're talking with Alicia Grandy. She's a professor of industrial and organizational psychology at Penn State University. And we're talking about emotional labor, the need to put on a happy face, a happy demeanor as part of your job. Marcia on Facebook wrote, "If I were paid for my emotional labor, I'd be a gazillionaire. Anyone who'd like to spend some time with me while I work with students in a high school where there's quite nearly a majority of students with mental illness, physical illness, IEPs, etc., is welcome to message me to set up a date to see what I mean." That's a whole area that we haven't even touched on, education.
Yes. Yeah. So the work that involves students or patients or kind of work that has to really be caring and compassionate, but also you're dealing with people with real difficulties, whether those are educational or health-related or mental health, as that person mentioned. There's also there a really strong professional norm of you're supposed to want to do it. You're not supposed to want to be paid for it, right? You're supposed to want to be caring and compassionate to those people. And I think that puts an extra burden on those people who then may feel guilty if they're complaining about that emotional labor.
How much does it differ if we are, you know, having to be friendly to our coworkers who we see every day or maybe, you know, work a few shifts with a week versus that one off with a customer? Is one or the other more tiring?
That's a great question. I don't know if we know the answer to that. We do know that small daily hassles aggregate over time. They can accumulate and create a major health issue, just the same as one major interpersonal event can. So I think it depends on the person. It depends on how much they ruminate over that negative event. It could happen once, but it really is distressing, and it's something they keep thinking about, and then it keeps affecting all their future interactions, even if they're pleasant.
I remember reading when I was preparing for this interview that there are really two different types of how we kind of put on that friendly, happy demeanor. One is very surface level, and one is a much deeper level. What's the difference between those two?
Yeah, so they draw on a dramaturgical or a theater-based perspective of a service work. So a person can go out and interact surface level. So that's just putting on the mask. You fake that smile. You just hide and push down how you're really feeling. I mean, that's kind of like a person, an actor getting on stage and just going through the motions. So it's not a great performance, but it gets the job done. On the other hand, you could have an employee who does deep acting, and this would be maybe they're kind of thinking about that customer as a friend. They're trying to understand where they're coming from, take their perspective. If they're upset, or like you said, the person that's always grumpy, they might, you know, think, well, maybe he has health issues, or maybe he's lonely. I mean, that helps you find that compassion and change how you're actually feeling. So it's not just putting on a mask. You're actually changing your internal state to be in line with what you're showing. And that improves the performance. It also seems to be less stressful because then you're not experiencing that dissonance, that tension between your feeling and your expression.
We're talking with Alicia Grandy right now. She's an industrial organizational psychologist from Penn State, and we're looking at the effects of emotional labor.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have to fake certain emotions in your job? What impact does that have on you, your well-being? Do you have a method for dealing with that or making these emotions more genuine? And do you think employers should be taking these demands into account more than they do? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll pick up that conversation after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time.
Right now, we're continuing the conversation on emotional labor with Alicia Grandy, professor of industrial organizational psychology at Penn State.
And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. If emotional labor is part of your job, tell us about your experience. Is it tough on you? Do you have tricks for how to put on emotions that might not be genuine? What do you wish customers or employers knew about your job? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And let's go to the phones, and Pam in Richland Center is up. Hi, Pam.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just thinking this sounds familiar, similar to, like, compassion fatigue. It's something you hear in the psychology or social work field is just the having to care for so many variety of people. And I know working with that I often see in my case management job the need to, like, take more breaks in between people. It's kind of like when you do, like, crisis line work. You're just hit one crisis after another. So anyway, that's a term that's been used a lot. The social work is compassion fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing I thought of is you were talking about actors or, you know, I was thinking that would be a environmental hazard. But also, like, bartenders, too, like anywhere who, you know, where you're trying to be sympathetic.
That's a great point. Thanks for that, Pam. And Alicia, what about that comparison to compassion fatigue?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I've just now made contact with a nurse manager who's very interested in thinking more about how emotional labor plays a role in the compassion fatigue she's seeing among her nurse team. The idea of breaks is also a great one, so that the effort it takes to maintain that smile over time is effort just like it is doing physical labor, like holding up an object and moving heavy objects repeatedly. You need to take breaks to give that emotion time to settle back down, come back to baseline, find your happy place, find a colleague you can kind of be yourself with, and then you can go back and you can keep doing that compassion or that emotional labor more effectively. Absolutely.
Wendy on Facebook wrote, I'm a service coordinator in senior housing. Most of my skills are soft skills, compassion, and listening. It can be very emotional dealing with death and aging and family drama, but I love it and can't imagine doing anything else. So that Wendy would seem like a perfect candidate for the compassion fatigue and the toll of emotional labor, but she still loves her job.
Yeah, there's actually findings that workers who are highly identified with their career, which it sounds like Wendy is, don't see as much of the costs. And the idea there is that even if they are feeling tired, they override that for the sake of their job. They feel so strongly about what they're doing and what it means to their sense of self that they will withstand that effort and they will withstand that fatigue and keep doing it and keep doing well at it. But they're also a prime candidate for burnout unless they take those breaks and do good self-care.
Let's go next to Michael in Tomahawk. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to comment on in other countries, say, for example, Poland, you really don't have in the service industry people smiling or it's very just professional and they just kind of do their job. And it's interesting because if you do smile at them, they get confused and they actually think it can be misinterpreted as flirting.
right.
That's a great point. And I have to say, Alicia, I was tickled to find a scholarly paper about this topic that dealt specifically with French waiters.
Yes. Yes, so I used to do these talks on this topic, and everyone would always ask me this question, specifically because they'd had bad service encounters in France. So I went to France, and I did this study, and sure enough, it's not as problematic in France because they have more latitude to be able to kind of show how they actually feel.
Well, and actually the French here, when they visit here, they feel kind of bombarded by customer service and, you know, having a wait person come by every 2 minutes and say, how's that first bite tasting? Can I get you anything else?
Yeah,
you
they know. Call us the Mickey Mouse culture.
Right.
The Disneyfication of service.
So it's a very cultural thing, the service with a smile, the customer's always right. That seems like a fairly American or at least North American idea.
Well, it probably originated here. It's the idea of differentiating one person's service from another. Hey, we don't only get you there on time. We do it with a smile. But it's actually become a worldwide phenomenon. So I've done a study where we looked at an Asian culture, a European culture. I'm trying to remember all of them. But we compared like 4 or 5 different countries, and we found that interactions with customers were expected to be similarly friendly across all of those, even though interactions with other parties, you know, coworkers or friends, those differed, the expectations differed. But that interaction with customer was expected to be similarly friendly everywhere we studied except for France. Now, we didn't look at Poland or Russia, which I believe is also similar to what you're describing, Michael.
Let's go back to the phones, and Matt in Madison is up. Hi, Matt.
Yes, hello. It is an interesting topic. I have an opportunity to observe a situation. I was training. I was brand new. And it was service industry. We were making deliveries of products. And anyway, the gentleman that was training me was a little bit of a curmudgeon. Anyway, when we arrived to make the delivery, the customer very pleasantly asked him how his day was going. And the gentleman that was training me gave a very candid response. He didn't sugarcoat it. And the customer became quite upset with that gentleman being so candid. And he went so far as to call our boss to complain, mm-hmm. Complain about this gentleman. So it was an interesting experience that I observed, and it just it relates to this topic, I think.
Great. Yeah. Thanks for that call, Matt. Alicia?
Yeah, there's a funny line that's been used. I can't remember who to attribute it to, but it talks about a service provider describing a customer coming up and saying, "Hey, where's my smile?" And the employee saying, "Okay, you first." So he smiles, and then she says, "Now hold it for 8 hours."
Hmm.
And it's just that realization that, you know what, we all have bad days, we all have bad moments, and customers have to remember that, and they have to respect that, I think.
Thanks for that call, Matt, at 800-642-1234. And that's a really interesting point that you just made, Alicia, those kind of comments like, where's that smile? Or, you know, hey, you know, why aren't you looking happy to see me or something? Do you think that there's more of an expectation of women than of men in those roles to be that very, you know, bubbly, happy, I'm so glad to see you, even though I have no idea who you are kind of persona?
I think that we have gendered norms around that in general, but I think once you're in a service context, that trumps gender. You know, we expect a service provider to be friendly regardless of their gender.
But it could be an extra layer on that expectation.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of all of these situations where we are expected to, you know, respond in a certain way, you know, Matt was saying that the person training him responded honestly, and it was clearly not what was expected or appreciated. As we have to do this in our everyday work lives, maybe for an entire career, what are some of the techniques or tactics that we can use to at least lessen how much it takes out of us?
Well, going back to that idea of deep acting, there is some evidence that if employees or managers can help their employees do perspective taking or practice mindfulness. I know it's one of these terms that's come up a lot, the idea of mindfulness, but anything that helps you reframe the situation and calm your body down so you're not as upset for that next interaction, so it doesn't continue to affect you person after person. You don't have to keep faking it all day. That deep acting technique can be more effective than using surface acting all day long. Other things that managers can do is to support and respect the effort that it takes. And that can take a financial form by recognizing employees that do a good job. I would say going beyond simply the Employee of the Month plaque, but having it actually be something that is valued and rewarded and recognized for the effort that it is. But also giving people some autonomy. We found that when workers feel like they have autonomy over their smile, over the way they handle their situations, they are less distressed, even if they do have to surface act occasionally. So it's respecting that sometimes it's just not the right time to fake that smile. That could be the customer is doing sexual harassment. It's not an appropriate time to fake a smile. Or it could be that that person just needs to have a break, and that should be permitted as well. And they need the autonomy to take that break to take care of themselves.
Are there any efforts in corporate America to actually train people who are in these kind of jobs to have some of those tools to make it a little easier on themselves? And in part, that would also acknowledge how hard it can be.
I think there's a variety of different corporate approaches that take a variety of different labels. So I know there's mindfulness interventions, for example. There's employee well-being interventions that can engage social support. It can encourage employees to talk to each other, to practice catharsis. So the earlier person that spoke about
dealing with compassion fatigue. There's evidence that if employees can kind of talk to each other and kind of have a support group around their concerns, that can help move forward more effectively.
I have to say, back when I was waiting tables quite a bit for quite a number of years, one of the little techniques that I had when someone was just being, you know, kind of outrageously badly behaved as a customer was I would kind of turn it into an anthropological observation and just, you know, kind of distance myself and think, wow, you know, in what universe would somebody think that's okay? And it just helped, like, to give myself that little distance. And I'll admit to feel slightly superior just to get me through, because often it was apparent the first time you walked up to a table that that was what the tone was going to be, and you were going to be working with them for the next 45 minutes.
That's really interesting. I think that's similar to what doctors are taught to do in order to deal with surgeries that are difficult, right? Is they don't think about it as a person's body. They step back and think about the organs as they've been taught in medical school. So in a way, that's kind of what you're doing. You're distancing yourself from the emotions of it and thinking about it as, okay, this is just going to be a job because of the nature of this table or this customer.
I also would kind of use the kill them with kindness, like no matter how rude or, you know, unpleasant they were with me, I was that much more nice and sweet. And again, maybe this says something about me feeling a little superior by doing it.
Well, I think it can come off a little bit of sarcasm. You have to walk that line carefully, right?
I have a very sweet face.
You can get away with it then, maybe, more easily than other people. But I agree with that. That does help.
Well, Alicia, thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure. It was great to be here, Judith. Thank you.
Alicia Grandy is a professor of industrial organizational psychology at Penn State University, and she was with us to talk about emotional labor and the impact it has on workers when they need to be nice.